It's now my privilege to introduce Dr. Zephaniah Kamida, our most welcome guest from the Lutheran Church in Namibia. As I indicated yesterday, it was agreed that we needed someone from the third world at this conference. And we thought first of Central or South America, and even had several possibilities in mind, including John Zabrino, whose name was mentioned last night. But we also thought of Africa, and especially since our Lutheran family has so many ties to Africa. But whom shall we invite, and from where? Gradually, the church in Namibia came into focus due to the continued oppression of that land, because of the apartheid ideology of South Africa, and due also to the increasing concern in the churches of the USA and elsewhere over the suffering Christians in Namibia, of whom 90% are Lutheran. But whom should we invite? For me, the name of Zephaniah Kamida first surfaced at the Worship and Witness Festival in Minneapolis 2 years ago, where he was one of the main speakers. And as I checked further, I realized this is the man I want to invite because of his personal warmth and joy, even in the face of acute tension and suffering, and because of his growing stature as a churchman and theologian of the Third World Churches. But it was no simple thing to get him here. In fact, it is one of God's small miracles that you're here. When I first wrote, almost 2 years ago, his passport had been taken away, and he was able to respond to me only indirectly through Solveig Kesseth, who's connected with the Namibia Concerns at Wartburg Seminary, and through the office of Ed May, who's in Lutheran World Ministries. Through them, he said yes, but obviously only if he could get his passport back. And so we waited and waited. And I finally wrote again in order to try and confirm our invitation and to see if something could happen. Dr. Kamida had also been invited to the Lutheran World Federation meeting in Budapest this past summer. And they were wondering if he would get a passport. But now a world organization was on our side. And finally, I received a letter on May 8th from Dr. Kamida saying yes again, but only if he would be granted his passport. And this letter to me had to be smuggled out. And I just want to briefly quote from that letter. He says, "I regret that I didn't write directly to you. We are finding ourselves in a country which is experiencing her birth throes. And so some of us are being used by Yahweh, the liberator of the oppressed, as midwives, although so weak and untrustworthy. My passport has been confiscated by the regime, which is occupying with military force our beloved country. I hope that they will return it to me before that time. If not, I'll let you know. This letter is being smuggled out. Otherwise, it will not reach you if I use the normal channels." And then listen to this. "May the Lord who forgave those who crucified him give us strength to forgive those who are crucifying us today." And then he sends his greetings. Then came the good news. Ed May wired me that a six-month passport had been issued for Dr. Kamida to come to the Lutheran World Federation meeting in Budapest and to this conference. Wonderful. But then at Budapest, Dr. Kamida, among other things, mentioned that the U.S. and South African governments had drawn up plans to use Namibia as a potential dumping grounds for nuclear waste. The U.S. government, as some of you are aware, immediately responded almost with violent protest. But Dr. Kamida stood his ground, and the evidence came out. But now, would he get a visa to the U.S.? I didn't know. But it took finally direct pressure from the Lutheran World Federation to the U.S. Embassy in Pretoria to get that visa. And it wasn't granted until 2 days before he left for the USA. Well, I wanted you to know that story because I'm grateful that he's here. I do not want to say much more since he has his story to tell you, and there's going to be ample time during our week here for you to visit with him and to ask him many questions, but just a few personal items. He's now vice president of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Namibia. He lives in Windhoek, Namibia. He's married to Elizabeth. They have 5 children, the youngest of which is 5 years old. He's a relatively young man, but has become already a world churchman, as his presence at the Lutheran World Federation meeting in Budapest indicates. His powerful testimony to the truth of God and the claims of Jesus Christ over against all systems of injustice and oppression make him a champion for the liberation of all persons in the world. Zephaniah, your presence here is an answer to our prayers. We welcome you and anticipate what you have to say to us. Let's give him a warm welcome.
Well, after such introductions, I feel so embarrassed that I don't know what to say. I sometimes look around and look at the nearest window or door just to not to hear what is being said. And that's why I sometimes, when I come to places, I say, well, let me introduce myself. to avoid the embarrassments. And so, my honor to you, Dr. Pilgrim, for inviting me. You didn't even know me, but you have the courage to invite me. I would like really to thank you and all those who were involved in my coming here to the United States. I would also, at the very beginning, warn you and ask your patience. If pronunciations of some words and names sounds a bit different from what you are used, well, that's the Southern African way of pronouncing things and so. And if you have got a question, please say, well, we didn't get that, what you want to say. Let's bear with my Southern African English. I would, with all love and affection and all the good things, like to just correct you, Dr. Pilgrim, saying that I'm really not coming from a third world. There is really not such a thing as a third world, I believe. I think so. We look at the account of the Old Testament, Genesis 1 and 2, you would only hear of the one world, God. I'm sure you didn't mean to be nasty or what, and so it's just that we are sometimes using vocabularies which we didn't think about it, yes, well, that was all. I'm coming from the continent of Africa, which is a continent in our one world, and I'm here to share with you what is happening in the other parts of our one world. I wouldn't have bothered to come if we were living in different worlds. But because... well, I'm not joking. I don't know what you want. Well, fine, okay. Yeah, when I introduce myself, I usually say, well, I'm Stefania Kameta, married to, name will sound a bit funny, married to Kangakwes. That's the name her parents gave to her. But as good Lutherans, were obedient to their pastors. They believed that you can't baptize your child with an indigenous name. If she's going to be a good Christian, she should be Elizabeth or Mary or Zephaniah, whatever you have. And so and I'm only an assistant to the president. We haven't got a bishop. I don't know what kind of a Lutheran church we are. We have got presidents and not bishops. Well, I have been honored here in Holton Village. I'm hearing now and then here Bishop Kameta and Bishop Kameta, and I say, well, that's okay. Thank you for that special honor. But, don't repeat it in the presence of my president. He will be surprised. I read in this small pamphlet, was it here or somewhere, that I was jailed twice. I think it was here, I'm not so sure. Well, that's all things which I really don't want to mention at all, even if they should serve as credentials to be accepted by people. Because I know friends of mine who suffered more than myself. I know a friend of mine whose ear was cut off and given to him as lunch. I know a friend of mine who was made to lick up his own blood after beating. I know a friend of mine who was buried alive, put in a coffin, and it was lowered from somewhere, and then sand was thrown on that, giving the impression that he's really being buried. And he had, after that, to receive some medical treatment, and it affected his spirit and mind, and damage it. And I'm sure he will live with that until he dies. And if I recall all the things, I don't even want to mention that I was arrested, because I was already at that time a pastor, and they were very much careful of doing things because there was so much protest. And this, I was really treated as a king, I should say, although I was kept in solitary confinement. I wasn't tortured or mistreated at all. It's really not me who should stand here in front of you and tell you these things, but it should be an ordinary Namibian somewhere from the streets there. We should be here and tell you what we are suffering and are experiencing daily, day and night. I thought to share with you, as a kind of an introduction, the situation in Namibia as it is now. And I call it South Africa's colonial rule and our resistance and call for justice and peace as a church. The Namibian people are living, and it's so difficult, I find it so difficult to say it in words. Somebody once asked me, I think it was in Germany or somewhere, would you please explain to me what oppression is? You people are talking so much of oppression and suffering. Would you briefly please, I've been reading also about that, but would you briefly please describe to me what it is? I said, well, I can't. But I wish if you could say only for 20 minutes, become black and travel to South Africa and live among us and experience what we are experiencing. There are also other people who would say, and I met them even here in the United States, not in this group anyway, but somewhere, and especially also in Europe, we would say, well, that's moving what you have been telling us, but I would really like to tell you that I was in South Africa. I spent time in South Africa, but I didn't see the things you are telling us now. Implying then that we are telling lies. And what that kind of people are forgetting is that, or the question one should pose to them is, in which South Africa were you? Was it in the white South Africa or in the black South Africa? There are people going to South Africa and would say, well, my friends has got a black lady working there for them, and she looked so happy. And when I ask her, how do you feel? Do you feel bad? Do you feel oppressed? She was all smiles and said, well, she is happy. She don't know anything of oppression or so. And then those people will return back and say, well, we have been there, and even talk to black people and hear from themselves that the situation is completely different. And they look so happy. Now, that poor woman has got 10 children at home, and she has to earn something, and you expect from her to say what she really feels in front of those people so that she might lose her job. And there are people, as it happened also in Zimbabwe, who have got servants in their homes, cleaning their homes, but who never visited those homes, those people's houses, the families. They would come and drop the servant in front of the door and never goes into the house. And that's why some people nearly died from heart attacks after the independence of Zimbabwe, finding out that the so-called boy who was working for them was the whole time a commander in the Liberation Army. And they never talked to him and knew him. There's people, when after returning from Southern Africa, should really ask themselves, to which South Africa have I been, did I visit? Thus, I'm coming from the black South Africa, don't be misled. And I know also what is going on in white South Africa. I recall what Dr. Wengerin, I'm sure I'm not pronouncing your name correct, but don't worry, you won't pronounce mine also correct. what he said yesterday so profoundly, I'm here among you because of that today. That's the only reason. I'm not being paid by anybody. I'm here because of that today. which you so profoundly proclaimed yesterday. That today, which is proclaiming the liberating presence or the liberating present reality of the Son of God, our Lord Jesus Christ. It is that today which has been compelling me to talk as I have been talking. It is that today which is compelling me to say things which I really fear to say. It is that today and not me. I am not a hero at all. I remember when we after 3 weeks after our marriage in 1972, our cat brought something in. I don't know what it was. And it was around 6 o'clock early in the morning that something under the bed made a terrible noise. Or something like that, I don't know. And I thought, well, I'm going to snore now, though I never snored in my life. So that she might think that I'm asleep. And after 10 minutes, she asked me, well, I'm sure you are awake. And I thought to myself, what a clever wife I married. And the second question was the question which I feared the most. Do you hear what is what the noise underneath the bed? Well, after a few seconds, I said, yes, I'm hearing that. And she said, I'm now thankful for the struggle for women liberation, that we are all equal and so on. Very much happy for that. But in an African context, she said, well, you are the husband then. That's your responsibility to see to that. Well, yeah, I say, yes, I know, that's my responsibility, but would you just look? And just see what it is, and and then I will see to that it is out. Well, she said, why should I go down to look? You go down and kill the thing or throw it away or so. But I said, well, yes, that's also we promise each other also co-responsibility for doing things. And that's why I would suggest that you really have a look down under the bed. Yes, to find out what it is, and then I will see to that it is. I never looked, and she never looked also. Unfortunately, we could hear the cat eating that thing up. Well, I hope I've got some friends here also among husbands who do the same thing. But just to illustrate that We are really not that wonderful as people would like to say, heroes, people who are unfearful, who will confront mighty powers, who would die as old martyrs with singing and praising the Lord. Well, I'm not so sure of that. Well, I believe also in the Spirit of God and in its power, that if it is to be that we should die that way, that the Spirit will lead us also in that dark hour with joy and happiness. And that's because of that today, not of a different thing, that I'm here. That today which compelled the old Simeon, I don't know whether the pronunciation is right, when he held the baby in his arms, he said, and it was again Luke who is telling us this story, saying, "My eyes have seen your salvation. My eyes have seen your salvation today, and now let me go in peace." Thus, because of this today, we are saying the things we are saying. I think that was because of that today that Dietrich Bonhoeffer, before his death, in one of his poems, said, "Let come what may come, I will give even the most precious thing you gave to me, and that's my life. Christ will be proclaimed." Thus, even knowing that, and the South African government has got, and they think that they have got all the power, that they are almighty, and knowing that I might disappear secretly, and that's happening now in Namibia, because those who are oppressing people are learning from each other. And I'm sure that South Africa has been learning a lot from the Latin American dictators to just let people disappear. And I'm quite aware, I haven't got illusions that I might disappear also in that way. And I love life. I love my wife and children. And I would hate a day when I will be separated from them. But despite all of this, because of this today, of that today, of the liberating present reality of the Son of God, we have to say what we are saying, even if it is risking our lives. I've seen photographs when I was in Atlanta, Georgia, of the open coffin of Dr. Martin Luther King. And what struck me most was his little children standing there around looking at the corpse of their father. When you look at that faces, innocent faces, feel, what are they thinking? And one of the boys looked really like my own son, and I thought, well, that can be also your children one day. Or I saw a photograph of the funeral of Steve Biko. His children standing there with their mother. And it registered in myself, and I knew Steve Biko, we were friends, registered in myself, well, it could have been you. And it might be you one day. This for some people, I get the impression that for some people, our struggle is, or our suffering, when we are telling these things, sounds so, shall I say, romantic, and people would like to listen to that. That's beautiful stories. But that's the harsh realities of life. That's really harsh realities of life. I sometimes feel within rebellion in myself, saying, well, I don't want to talk anymore anything about Namibia. And especially when we come out, then you breathe a little bit. Then you breathe a little bit and you feel, well, if I can be quiet for a few days and not think about that nightmare, because it's really a nightmare in our situation. But then on the other hand, we realize the love and solidarity of you people here outside. We would like, with all love, to hear and to contribute and to struggle and to cry with us. And thus we have then to repeat that nightmare time and again. I will repeat the same story when I go to Auckland. I will repeat the same story whether I would like it or not, when I go to Denver and to Washington and New York, and then go home into the struggle itself and fight every day, receive phone call threats saying, well, you were outside and you are forgetting that we have got some friends, even among those people who are your friends. And they have been informing us that things which happened to me when I was in Holland. We received a whole tape recorder of what you have been saying. But be careful. Your wife and children will be soon left alone if you are not careful. Well, and you never know when these threats will become a reality one day. And they will, for sure. We know that. The people of Namibia are living day and night under South Africa's ruthless apartheid laws. Well, this word apartheid has been used so much that I don't know whether people really know what it is. It's nearly like communism, which people also use without really knowing what in fact it is. Because of those racist apartheid laws which favor the whites and oppress the blacks, the reality of hatred, animosity and war has been created. The laws which has been based on the God of dividing people on the basis of their color and race. The God who hates the blacks and loves the whites. But is that true? Does he really also love? Does he really love the whites? No. He
They think so, but he hates them also, that God, the God who is dividing people. Because he is an enemy of humanity. He is dividing people, and thus is he declaring himself as an enemy of creation and humanity. The church leaders, on behalf of the Namibian people, has stated and voiced it unambiguously and repeatedly their rejection of the evil ruling of our beloved country. Well, they have been told that church should restrict itself to the spiritual sphere. The task of the church is to be concerned about the soul and not about the body. The task of the church and the concern of the church shouldn't be also the today, but it should be the eschatos, coming things, the hereafter. Today is not so important. We can oppress each other, exploit each other, do things to each other which are not right, and it's not so important, as long as we make sure that we one day come to heaven. That's what the church in Namibia has been told and is being told. I was told that also 3 days before I was traveling to Budapest. I was summoned by the Administrator General's office, where he said that he feels that I should resign as a pastor and become a politician because I am too much involved in politics, and that's not the task of the church. Well, I tried to answer him, or saying that this world has been created by God. And this God who created this world is the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ is sending the church into the world, where politicians are doing things which is against the will of God. It should not be then the church which should get out of the world, but the politicians then. Because the world belongs to God and not to the politicians. It is not the pulpit which mustn't be taken out of the world, but parliaments and governments. Then, as long as this world belongs to God, and I am sure it will forever belong to Him, the church should speak out against injustice and oppression in God's world. I'm hearing the bell ringing, and I think I should stop now. I haven't even started with my.
Another 10 minutes at least.
Do we have got 10 minutes? Well, fine. Yes. Please stop me, because if you keep quiet, I will continue to talk on for 7 hours. Well, that's true. Our church services in Namibia won't last then. I don't feel like going to church if I sit in a church which lasts for only 1 hour, as it happened at the university. It should last for 3-4 hours, then I feel I was to church. Well, you are clapping, you won't enjoy it when you come to Namibia. The churches did see it their responsibility to speak out. And what's the church? The church is the people of God. And that's the people who are being oppressed. Why shouldn't they speak out? The church is not the bishops, the cathedrals, the beautiful buildings, the synods. But the church is the members of the body of Jesus Christ. And that these members were being oppressed day and night. Why should they then be silent? We are convinced that the vast majority of the black population of our country fervently desires that the South African police, army, and administration should rapidly leave this country. That's what seven churches said, joined in the Council of Churches. Again, this year, the Lutherans, the Anglicans, the Roman Catholic Church, which is a full member and a founding member of the Council of Churches, the Methodist, the Congregationalist, the African Methodist Episcopal Church, I forgot one. Well, don't worry. That South Africa, they believe that their members want the South African administration leave Namibia immediately. And those churches are representing nearly 100% of the whole population. Although one official from Washington who visited the Council of Churches in a very eloquent way said, well, did you conduct elections to find out that you are representing so many Namibians? It was a certain Master Simpson who visited us from Washington, who wanted just to convince us that it is important that the Cubans withdraw first from Angola before Namibia can become free. These policies, the policies of apartheid, has destroyed human dignity and bedeviled relationships within family and community, and so totally alienated the black population from the whites. And that's because of these laws of oppression. Why then some people left the country and took up arms to fight the South African government? Immediately, when you talk about that, comes the question of, what's your stand on violence as a Christian, as a good Lutheran? And if you ask, what, which violence? Well, the violence of SWAPO, of the guerrillas, or the terrorists, as they are being called. According to our African understanding, violence doesn't start at the battlefield, but violence starts at that moment when human relationships has been cut down. The moment war doesn't start with the shooting and throwing of hand grenades and things, but war starts at that moment when we two decide we are not talking. We won't talk to each other anymore. Thus, in my language, I would say we are at war with each other. If we decide to fight each other, to throw things to each other, that's not the war, but that's the consequences of the war which has already been declared by the breaking down of relationships. That's where violence starts. Violence starts when a law is saying, you are black, you are white, you mustn't come together, you mustn't live together. That's declaring war between people. That's where violence starts. That's so artificial when people start to ask what my attitude will be towards the consequences of violence. This violence starts and started in Southern Africa with the imposing of the apartheid laws on the black people. That's when violence, that was the South African government which declared war against black people through its apartheid laws. And when people ask about violence, they should ask about that violence and not about that consequences. Today, if the South African government scrap from its laws all the not some or not modernize it as they are doing now and say that's a new dispensation or making it more complicated that people won't recognize it. Well, if they really scrap it and throw it away, then there will be no need of fighting, of throwing hand grenades. Because that's only the result of the war which has been declared. There's war, the word war, in an African context, is not being used in the context of fighting each other, shooting at each other, and throwing hand grenades to each other. But it is starting at that moment, even if I myself and my wife at words, and we are for that few hours which happen in every marriage, I think also here in the United States, that people would, for one or other nonsensical reason, decide, well, I'm not going to speak first to her, and she would say, oh, well, if you don't speak first, I won't also speak first, and so, and people will remain quiet the whole time in the house without saying a thing to each other. And if you ask an African wife or husband, how is it with your wife? Is she okay? Or how is your husband? Is he well? And the wife will say, well, today we are at war today with each other. That's where war starts, when the relationships break down. Let's look at the violence which has been started by imposing laws of oppression on people. Secondly, peace in Africa and towards, according to an African understanding, is not just something, it's not just a word. When I use the word peace in English, well, I just use it to say something to you. But in Africa is, and especially in my language, is peace something concrete, a movement. In my language, we haven't got a different word for peace and meeting each other. If I say, well, let's meet at the dining hall within a few moments. In my language, I will use the same word, which would then say, let's make peace at the dining hall, which means exactly the same thing as meeting. The peace is meeting a person. I've come from Namibia, and if I speak in my own language, I would say, I've come from Namibia to make peace with you, to meet with you. And if I refuse to come and I say I don't want, then I am at war with you. But I come to meet you because, well, yeah, that's the same thing. I've come to make peace with you. And when I leave you, I would say, well, bye-bye until we make peace again. This peace is something concrete, something you see. And this you can't force people, and it happened in South Africa that they created some stooges political parties where the slogan was peace. They would force people saying, well, let's say peace because the others are for violence. Peace is not something you can enforce at all. It's something which comes from each other, from itself. And therefore, I've seen also somewhere some declarations of guilt and so. I find it difficult in our liturgy to read it from the paper, the confession of sins, because it doesn't really exist in Africa, or especially in our tradition. Well, I'm afraid I have to stop now, and I'm afraid I don't want also now to feed you now with African theology and understanding of forgiveness. But if we have quarreled with each other. And I want to make peace with you. I won't write you a nice letter of confessing my sins against you. But what I will do is I will come travel from my house, slaughter a goat. Well, I think I shouldn't mention it here at Holton Village, so I realized. well, let's say for slaughter a fish. Well, I earnestly appreciate the way of life here. I'm not making jokes at that, but in trying to tell you about Africa, I can't help myself of slaughtering goats and cattle and things. They're slaughtering a goat, and I will go to your place, and I will come, and I won't say anything. I'll say, where are the fox? Where's the fireplace? And you will show me, and I will collect the pots and cook. And I bring, let's start to eat. And I sit beside you, and we start to talk. That's why, that's how a confession of sins is being done, or has been done, not anymore in our tradition, that you really must come, make peace, meet with that person. A confession of sins somewhere far away, it won't help anything, but you make peace by meeting that person and sharing with that person what you have got. And then, while we are eating and celebrating our meeting, making peace together, we then can talk over of what happened and clarify the misunderstandings which has been there, and so on. But the first thing is that we meet and thus make peace with each other. How is it with our time?
Perhaps we should conclude soon.
Yeah. I think we should do that. And and I would say that I haven't even started with the first paragraph of my presentation, in the introduction, but I think it is giving you a little bit a glimpse. Maybe that's good that I talk such informally to give you a glimpse, because after listening of all these problems with passports, and you have heard also that I've got now, that there were also problems with your good government here. They were not so happy of what I said, and which I really insist that it was true, that there were such negotiations. One would easily say, well, then he must be an international terrorist. And that was good, in a way, to introduce myself in such a way, and we will continue then tomorrow, where I will then try to stick to what I have prepared, and share also with you. And I was so happy to listen to Dr. Bratton, the question of reformation. How do we understand reformation, especially in our situation of Southern Africa, and give you then more information of what is happening then there in Namibia. And maybe while we are dispersing, we can listen to the tape. Is that possible? To some songs?
The person who runs the tape, I don't know if he's up there right now. Why don't we play it right before the next session? Perhaps we'll have that ready.
Okay.
Maybe in music for you.
Thank you.